or your kavana, and you proceed yourself.
MB told me that could not order
Rabbi Sipo Beshelach.
My nostrils. My days at the BBC.
What?
I'm waiting.
How do you feel about the Congress?
Tell him I'm waiting. Yeah. You're on it, tell him.
How do you feel about the Congress of America?
The Congress.
The Congress of America.
What part is this? That's right.
I don't do stuff,
whatever
you think is great to you.
Okay, we'll call this week. Okay, Rabbi Sai, I want to start this week's parsha with a quite heavily speckled and spotted with a few very, very good stories this week, because a maisa, this parsha is something that is, it's a very pleasant parsha. Yeah, it's not techocha, it's not parshas dealing with it's dealing with Klal Yisrael appreciating finally coming out of Mitzrayim and finally realizing where they are in connection to Rabbeinu Shleilam. So it's a very, very, it's a very beautiful parsha, and therefore I want to just go through in a few different nekudas I have not yet mentioned in the last couple of years. Vahi b'shalach pari esa'om. And it was at Paris, b'shalach pari esa'om, Paris sent Klal Yisrael out. V'lo nocham elekim derech eretz Philistim. And a Kodesh Baruch Hu did not take them through derech eretz Philistim, ki korifu, because it is koriv. Now, Rashi translates ki korifu, v'noyach loshuv bo'oise haderech in Mitzrayim. It's very easy to go back on that same path to Mitzrayim. The Das Sakeinim of Bali Tosfos explained the Nochem Kikorev Hu to mean Kikorev Hu because he is close. Who's he is close? The Nochem Elikim Derech Eretz Yisrael Kikorev Hu because he is close. Who's he? He is a Kodesh Baruch Hu to Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael is close to Kodesh Baruch Hu. Kikorev Hu means a Kodesh Baruch Hu is close to Klal Yisrael. What does that mean? So on two aspects, I want to focus on two aspects. So Chofetz Chaim on the Torah, he says that Klal Yisrael had two options, slightly different to last year. Klal Yisrael had two options in how they could leave Mitzrayim. Either they could leave Mitzrayim and go through Eretz Plishtim. Eretz Plishtim would be very easy to go through, so they had the supermarket chains, they had the air conditioning, they had the various different forms, very easy to go through Mitzrayim and through Eretz Plishtim, had everything there.
Okay.
At Eger, they have transportation, and everything the person possibly wanted, that was in Eretz Plishtim. The disadvantage was that by going through Eretz Plishtim, there is an element there of bad. There's an element there of bad influence. And that bad influence could rot Klal Yisrael to the core. They can make them so bad that it wouldn't even be zoicha to reach Kabbalat HaTorah. That's one way of dealing with it. The other way of dealing with it was taking Klal Yisrael through a midbar where there's no bad influences, because how much influence can a rock hierarch have to a human being? Yeah, it doesn't do that much bad. However, there's no food. There's nothing there. Nothing. It's totally shamama. It's empty. It is boiling hot. There's no water. There's no food. There's snakes, scorpions. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is now responsible for 600,000 men, equivalent amount of women, plus children below the age of 20 and men above and women above the age of 60, a few million people, taking them through into a midbar. Now, if a good Jewish mother, yeah, David, what does your wife do in order to take your baby to the park across the road? You have the bum bar and you have your drinks and you have everything. That's just taking a kid across to the park. He's taking a few million people up to the midbar. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided that it's better to do nisim niflois, an unbelievable nisim, and to take Klal Yisrael through the midbar and change the whole world's metzias, making mon and slav and anone eish and anone kovod and all these different things, just in order that Klal Yisrael should not come into bad influence with bad people. Says the Chofetz Chaim, this is a Musa Haskel. It's a tremendous Musa for people before they go into business. So people go to business and they got to make money. You're right, you have to support a family, you have a ksuba, and you've got children to support. You've got to make money. What can you do? He says that to come into business with a bad partner, or to come in an environment where unfortunately there's a bad element there, in a gross environment where you have a choice to make less money, in an environment where you're actually feeling comfortable, that's not a choice. That should not be a choice. That should be so easy for you. For Kodesh Baruch Hu could supply Klal Yisrael, a few million people in the midbar, with nothing, from nothing, he could support them with plenty of everything they needed, clothes and food and everything, without anything, without any problem at all. He can't support you with your business. Of course he could. There's one story with Reb Chaim Leib Mishkovsky. Reb Chaim Leib Mishkovsky was a rabbi in Poland, and the people used to come round, minhag which some places still do, and they come and people go around, the peddlers used to go around and they used to display their wares all over the shul. They got a little corner there, a table next to the oven. They display their wares, a few mezuzahs, couples of pairs of tefillin, tzitzis, couples, whatever, they display all over the place. And so this fellow came, he never knew anything about the city. He comes to the shul of Reb Chaim Leib and he puts out his wares, and amongst his wares were some books on Minus Apocalypsis, a few secular books on I don't know, whatever it could be, some secular books written by some Apocalypsian. So Reb Chaim Leib Mishkovsky, without even flinching, he takes the whole set and throws it into the furnace, and within seconds the whole thing's up in flames. So this guy, you know how hard it is for me just to make ends meet, to eke out a bit of bread to support my family. You take my money and you just throw it into the fire. How can you do such a thing? A yid, geneva. He says, I'll be hilchus geneva, no hilchus geneva, but I'll pay you back. He took out his wallet out and he paid him how much it would have cost him to how much the books cost. He said, but you know, helping with your panosa, come to my house tomorrow afternoon, I'll try and arrange something for you. You can have a steady panosa. Fellow's delighted. He thought maybe his days of wandering the streets are over. Fantastic, he's got a nice parnasa. He comes to the Rav's house, and the Rav said to him, come inside. You know, you discussed this about making a good living for you. I managed to make a meeting with you with somebody who can really help you. He says, who's this? He says, there's a priest down the road who I made a meeting with you and the priest. He said, what do you mean? He said, I think it'd be a good siddach. You know, you and the priest could, you know, make some panosa and you can work for the priest. He said, what are you talking about? He said, what happened was a couple of weeks ago the church bell ringer died. The guy used to ring the bells. Yeah. This fellow who knew how to do it, he died. And you need somebody who's going to ring the bells. It's a very, very honourable position. Every day you get up at 10 o'clock in the morning, Sunday morning, and you ring the bells of all different things, the strings from all different things, and you work in St. Patrick's Day and St. this day and St. that day, and you all get it all right, and it's a very honourable wage. And he said, you're joking. I'm a yid, I've got a couple and sisters and I can work in a church. He said, I don't understand your problem. You're very happy. It's better to call goyim to serve their avodah zarah than to get Jews to serve avodah zarah. He said, what's wrong with calling goyim to serve avodah zarah? They're going to serve avodah zarah anyway. But you're willing to take Jews and to serve avodah zarah? You're willing to take Jews and willing to to sell them books that are going to make them never go off the derech? They are willing to do. People sacrifice a tremendous amount of principles when it comes to poshut ideals of money. People somehow lose it when it comes to money, when it comes to getting the other person, somehow getting around the laws of taxation, getting around the laws of people, making an extra buck, going away from home. You know how many people I know who go away from home? Okay, I'm fundraising for Yeshiva. But people go away from home for days on end, for weeks on end sometimes, leaving their family. And the kids are messed up. Why? Because they have to go to Hong Kong every week. They leave on Motzei Shabbos, and they come back on Friday afternoon. And they're making very good money. Can I know they're living in beautiful houses, got nice cars. But what's with the chinuch of the kids? What's with the poor wife? Terrible. Terrible. But just to make a bit of money, why can the Kodesh Baruch Hu going to give us panasa? If we know and we believe that Kodesh Baruch Hu created us an environment in the Midbar, where millions of people went out, so Kodesh Baruch Hu supported them all, nobody died of hunger in the Midbar. They died of other things, but not because of hunger. Then we can believe that Kodesh Baruch Hu could look after us too.
Isn't that a cloud that we can't get money? It's a curse that we will be, that we won't be able to.
Make
money? It will be hard.
It will
be a
void. It's
also a void. Okay, so then what's so bad about going to Hong Kong?
Not known, I'll just go every week. Some people go every week. They go. I've got friends who mamash literally go every week. If you have to go, you have to go. You know what I'm saying? People do the craziest things to make a little bit more money. People do dangerous things to make more money. And that's awesome. That's like what we say, koshim panasos and shalom to Kriyas Yom Suf. The panasa is hard like Kriyas Yom Suf. What's hard about it? Because what could do Kriyas Yom Suf in a second? You can do the panasa in a second. What's hard about Kriyas Yom Suf? Koshin means that we've got to do the Hishtadlus. Just like by the Yom Suf, we went in as far as we could. We did our Hishtadlus, didn't go any further than that. So too, when it comes to Parnasa, you don't have to do more than your Hishtadlus. Do whatever you can and that's it. You've got to rely on the Kodesh Baruch Hu. Either you will or you won't, totally new Chusin. But to do go over Hishtadlus is something that's incorrect. Kikorevhu means HaKodesh Baruch Hu is close to us. Now what's close to us is it means like this. That the Kodesh Baruch Hu is so close to us that we have to know in our generation specifically that we have to get this idea out of our heads, or this Christian idea or out of our heads of a Kodesh Baruch Hu is out to get us. There's a Christianity, this idea of the devil, and we're doomed. We're born doomed. People and a Christian will ask you, what have you done to get yourself saved? What have you done to save yourself? We don't have to save ourselves. We're Tohir. Until we mess up, we don't have to be saved, we're automatically saved. It's totally different direction. It's very, very difficult today for people to come to terms with working through issues in the Derech of Yira. Very, very difficult to work through, go through Sforim, and one goes through today in Shevavim, idea of Shevavim. Yeah, going through the whole concept of Shevavim, of Kedusha and Tahara, and the Pagam Habris. The terrible things, a person does this, mamish. There are terrible things, absolutely, that's not the point. There are terrible things happen to a person who's smirched in mind, unbelievable, terrible. But the Maisa, the person focuses on these things, today's generation is a very spoilt, very sensitive generation, very sensitive. One has to work on building ourselves rather than breaking ourselves. If we start looking at ourselves and start saying to ourselves, we're terrible and we have to do tshuva and we're so bad, you should know that's the eighth of horror. What you have to do is, like the Kotzke used to do. The Kotzke was a very, very sharp man. Very. Kotzke. Kotzke was very sharp. He did not beat around the bush. The Kotzke used to, every Erev Shabbos, he used to kick everyone out of shul. And he used to do Stein Mikra v'Echa Targum. He'd do Stein Mikra v'Echa Targum. He'd take the Sefer Torah out from the base, from the on a Kodesh. He'd read through the whole parasha twice and then go through the Targum. And he'd throw everyone out of the shul. It's his shul, he threw everyone out. He locked the door, he closed the windows, closed the shutters, and he'd start. One time, one of his talmidim wanted to see what he was doing. What's so private about doing Sinek Lecha Targum? Now, what is it? What's so private about it? Why can't allow people to be in there? Why did he have to close the doors, throw everyone out? So he hid inside one of the cupboards. There's a cupboard there where they kept the storm, he hid inside the cupboard. And he left it open a tiny bit where he could see out. And lo and behold, he threw everyone out, he hid in the cupboard, he locked the doors. And the Kotzke went up to the Aron HaKodesh. And he's about to open the Aron HaKodesh. And he jumped back. And he said, how can I open the Aron HaKodesh? Who am I to start opening Aron HaKodesh and taking out the Sefer Torah, carrying the Sefer Torah of the Bnei Sodom's words? How can I possibly do such a thing? I'm a Rasha. I'm a bad person. I did such chetoyim. I'm Tomei. How can I do such a thing? And he jumps back. And then after 2 minutes, he says, no! What I've done in the past, I've done in the past. Although from Heinz and Leiter, from today forward, I'm not going to do it. And he goes up to Aron HaKodesh, and he's about to open the door, and just then he jumps back again. He said, but I said that last time. I said that last week, I said, I'm not going to do anything. And I did it again. And I missed davening again, and I didn't do it. How can I do this again? And he works, last is the last thing. Oh, but yes, from Heinz and Leiter, but today is going to be different. And he goes forward again. And this happens 10 times. Until eventually he goes open. Oh, but yes, really from Heinz and Leiter. Now, that's it. And he takes the Sefer Torah, and he takes the Sefer Torah out, and he starts reading it. Von Heinz und Weiter has to be our motto. What happens soon before, we can do tshuva in years to come. Or but von Heinz und Weiter, today is going to be different to the past. We have to make sure that we don't put ourselves down. Yeah, I've made Kabbalahs. How long did it last? It's Kabbalahs. And well, who am I? Von Heinz und Weiter, today is a new day of the rest of your life.
But isn't there a danger of getting to Al-Malaf thinking that one could do this Al-Malaf to do tshuva?
Von Heinz und Weiter. For the Heinz and Weiter, one can't work with Yira. Yira doesn't work today.
No.
Yira works with a few of the Nevadika, you know, Big Bali Musa, you know, Simpson Pinkus is. Yeah, there's a tremendous amount of Yira there, but a tremendous amount of Ava as well. But the real Yira people, very few of them around today. The Master Rosh Hashiva is a real Yira person. But people, you know, it's very hard to connect with such people today. In this generation, it's very, very difficult. It's got to be a derech. Where from Heinz und Weiter, you've got to love yourself, you've got to appreciate yourself, you've got to realize that, okay, I did terrible things in the past. From Heinz und Weiter, new start, new beginning, and wonderful person. Very important lesson. Ki korifu. I'm sorry?
I mean, how do you.
The present, whatever's been has been, whatever's been has been, I've got to start a new start. From today onwards, a new start, I'm going to manage from now on.
How do you use that cloud when you've done wrong?
With what?
When you're
doing. No, no. When you're doing something wrong, you got to do something wrong. You can't lie off whatever you want.
Yeah.
But if you want to make a new start, you can't start speaking to yourself. I have to make a new start now. I tried to start so many times. No, von Heinz und Weiter. Yeah. New start. The Pasuk says later on. Of course you can, no, but regret it in the distance. When you're starting to do better, then regret it. Why don't you start on the correct derech, then regret it? If you start wallowing in self-pity and so, you won't get anywhere. The Pasuk says later on, in Perek Yedalud, Pasuk Gimel. The Pasuk says, V'omar Paro Livnei Yisrael. Paro said to Livnei Yisrael, Nevuchim Heim Ba'oretz. Nevuchim Heim Ba'oretz. Soga Aleim Hamidbo. Nevuchim Heim Ba'oretz means Nevuch. Kluim, Mushukoim, they're lost in the Oretz. Segar Aleim HaMidbo, close to them the Midbo. V'chizakti Yisleis Paroi, and I'll strengthen the heart of Paroi, V'rodat Achreim, and the run after you, V'kovdu B'Paroi, B'chol Chela, V'yodim Yisram, Ken Yashem, V'yasuchim. Now, this pasuk, Paroi and Mitzrayim, are the classic examples of the Yetzirah and Yetzirah and the Sotim. Paroi is a Sotim, Mitzrayim is a Mitzar, is surrounding you with evil. That's Mitzrayim. So that the Bala Musa say that V'omar Paroi is a Sotan. V'omar Paroi is Nei Yisrael to the Yetzer Hora Nevuchim Heim Ba'oretz. They're lost. So Galeim HaMidbar, close them up. Close them up. In other words, the prophet is saying that the classic way that the Yetzer Hora destroys the Yetzer HaTov is showing him that he has not found his way in life. Nevuchim Heim Ba'oretz, they're lost. They don't know where they should be going. Nevuchim Heim Ba'oretz, they don't know where their potential is. They don't know where they should be doing. They're not sure how they should be working on themselves. Nevuchim Heim Ba'oretz. If so, Segar Aleim HaMidbar, just close out the Midbar around them. V'chizakti Yisleis Paroi V'radaf Achrein, the Sotan run after you, he's got you. Unless a person realizes where he should be going and how much potential he has, then Segar Aleim HaMidbar, the Midbar is closed up for him. There's an amazing story I heard from Aaron Kotler. This is said over by Ramea Chodosh, the Mashkiach of the Chevron Yeshiva, Zechut Tzadik Livracha. He said, Ramea Chodosh?
Ramea Chodosh recently.
What's that? Yemei Chodosh. Yeah, the Mashiach of Chevron. He has two sons. I mean, two sons that we know. Remei Chodosh. Remei Chodosh is the Mashiach today of the Chevron Yeshiva. And there's another one, Reboch Mot, and we have Rav Aaron Chodosh. Rav Aaron Chodosh is Mashkech of the Mir. Yeah? So he said that this. He said that there was a story that once in a Shiva in Slobodka, there was a Talmud of Nebuchadnezzar Yosem, a 14-year-old Yosem, from his father and from his mother. His name was Aaron Kotler. Aaron Kotler, Nebuch, little Yosem, Aaron Kotler. A Yosem, an orphan, from his father and from his mother. And Aaron Kotler was doing okay in Yeshiva, nothing special. And his family came to speak to the Alter from Slobodka. And they said to him, you know, his family, he had other family, uncles, aunts, whatever it may be. They went to speak to the Alter from Slobodka and said to him, listen, we hold very much in Yiddishkeit, we hold it's a wonderful thing to be frum, but Aaron's got to make up on us someday. Don't make fun of someday. We're thinking of taking him out to medical school. Teach him to be a dentist. And he could be a Talmud Chochem still. He could still learn Daf Yomi every day, even be a Magid Shir in Daf Yomi. He could be something big. He's got such good head, he's got such good skills, he's got very good hands, he's a very sensitive person. He'd be an excellent dentist. We'd like to take him out to take him to dental school. So the Alter from Slobodka, very clever, he didn't tell Aaron about anything. He said to him, listen, Give me 3 weeks, I get back to you. And come back in 3 weeks' time. So the Alter from Slobodka got the best bochrim to learn with Reb Aaron. The best bochrim of the yeshiva got to learn with Reb Aaron. And he started learning with him. And Reb Aaron had never seen such geschmack in his learning in his life. And he learned. And he one sugi after another, and he was getting into it. He had an afternoon chavrusa, an evening chavrusa, Shabbos chavrusa. He was getting into learning like the mesikas atoyah, the sweetness he couldn't imagine. After 3 weeks, the family come back. And he went to Reb Aaron and said to him, I'd like you to come to medical school. Me? Medical school? You crazy? Me? Yeshiva? Never in the world. I'm carrying on the sugya. No, but Panasa, forget it. I'm learning the sugya. And he stayed, and Aaron Kotler became, what did Aaron not become? He became the greatest manhig in America. Today, American Jews have very few people to thank more than Aaron Kotler. Today, the America, how the Klal Yisrael in America, the millions of Frum Yid in America, not millions, 100,000 Frum Yid in America, all because of Aaron, how he put the Torah world on the map there. It was empty, there was nothing there. If Aaron Kotler put the Torah world on the map, he built the Lakewood Yeshiva, he wrote Mishnas of Aaron, he wrote in Haskofa, in Halacha, in Musa, in Londus. Unbelievable, he goes through his forum, Aaron was phenomenal. And imagine after Mayav Etzim 120, he comes up to Shemayim, and he's a dentist. Wonderful dentist. Yeah, he does bridges and crowns, and he tooth whitening, and he's fantastic, and he's honest, and he gives Daf Yomi Shir every night. You know, he learns, he manages to learn, and he's written a few ha'oros on the side of his Gemara, which are very noteworthy. Gavaldik, and they come up and say to him, "Okay, do you want to show? Introduce him to somebody else. There's somebody here called Rav Aaron Kotler. Yeah, he has tens of thousands of talmidim." Hundreds of thousands of people in Klal Yisrael are shrei Torah mitzvah because of him. Here's a whole table of all his sforim. This is what you could become. 3 weeks. 3 weeks earlier, who knows what could become of him? Mevuchim heim ba'aretz. Mevuchim heim ba'aretz means that if a person is stuck in the land, he doesn't know he's shakua, he's stuck in the world, he's lost. Segar lema midbar, everything closes up. If a person knows that he has tremendous potential, and every person has, otherwise we wouldn't be still breathing today. Everyone has potential, everyone has a greatness, and one's got to tap into that and become great, not become Nebuch. You know, there's loads of mediocre people around, and the world is full of Nebuch, no shortage. One's got to be great, one's got to be something special in what one is. It doesn't have to be the biggest magichir and the biggest, greatest mechanuch, but one has to be great in what one's doing. One's got to be something extraordinary. Now, what's one has to be? One has to strive for greatness. And that's Mevuchim Heim Ba'aretz. Otherwise, people just get stuck where they are.
So greatness has to be different for those people around you. So just living a passionate life, going, davening, doing a bit of work, bringing up a family. Isn't that also greatness?
Do the best way you possibly can.
So how do you find the greatness? You're living a life like everyone else. If you're Mashiach, then you're different to everyone else. You automatically become great.
I it's very easy for some people to be maskicha, they're not great. It's sometimes the small people who are really great.
No, the
passive fight. Sometimes what we call passive people are very great people.
Great means fulfilling your potential.
Great means fulfilling their potential. They're working hard. You get people who, you know, you get people who. I know in London there's a black cab driver. Yeah? A black cab driver. A guy, a lovely fellow. What does he do? Every week he comes to my father. Every week he comes to my father and he has a box. My father has a. He bought himself a safe deposit box. Like a box, a safe box. With a key, right? Every week he comes to my father and he puts inside a box £150, £200, whatever, a lot of money, whatever. And where does that money go to? That money goes to support his brother in Bnei Brak. This guy, he can't learn, he can't go through Rebbe Akiva Eger, he can't go through Rukutsof. His brother is learning, he's building a family in Bnei Brak. He said, if I have this money at home, I know I'll spend it. Here he comes every week, he puts some money in. When it reaches £1,000, my father changes him to shekel, he sends him to Eretz Yisrael. That's a great man. That's a good man. Nobody knows. One sitting back at the shul. Maybe he'll get chamishi. Yeah, maybe. Yeah, that's if he has yotzeit and he has birth of his son and he's a mishaberach because you know for. But he's a great person. You know, you can't trust anybody, but he's got to be great. That's some serious nefesh. It's not easy. Yeah, the meter goes tick 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 tick. A little bit too fast for us, but too slow for him, right? And he's earning his money, but that money goes to his brother. That's great people. Yeah, but
he's so the Aaron Cutler, you know, he could have been a dangerous soul matter.
100%. But the Rosh Hashiva untangled him from the Rukhim Haim Ba'oret. He got him out.
He had the best time eating now learning. He was sitting there one day.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Sometimes you don't have the chance to smile. But he actually untangled him from the Rukhim Haim Ba'oret. He showed him his potential. That is the tachlis of a mechanech to try and bring that out.
But it wasn't his family coming and saying to Ron Collins saying, "So you want to be a dentist?" And so he goes, "No, no, no." They come to the Mashiach and saying, "We think we should do this for him." He was still learning, you know, shot as it were.
I agree with you. I'm not saying it's galus of Aaron. I'm just saying that there's a concept called mevukam haim ba'or. It's a person that gets stuck. And it takes a great person, or even himself, if possible, to untie themselves, to unlock themselves from their potential.
How do you know when you're fulfilling your potential, and also when you're not doing too much?
That's a bigger scope for discussion. I don't know how to discuss that now.
As you know, God is even being represented. You never seen.
Come on. Right. You know what he did in America? Do you have any idea what yeshiva he built up? What world of Talmidim he built up? He changed. He's together with Pshach. I mean, what they did with Pshach and Eshishon, what he did in America, they worked together a lot. They built up the Knesset Gedolah, they built up that Gudas Yisrael. Unbelievable, from scratch what they did. Maybe it was. Maybe he could do the best teeth whitening in the world. The best crowns and the thinning. But what is that compared to building a whole Olam HaTorah?
He wouldn't have had so much success.
Come on! I mean, building the Olam HaTorah, building millions, thousands and thousands of from the Yidden.
How much Torah you have?
Yeah. Of course.
Maybe.
Of course.
How much
fulfilling your potential of being a dentist? The best dentist in the world is not close to the biggest Rashid in the world. He could have been the best dentist. Fine, what's it going to do for him?
Maybe he would have achieved the best of
time. If he could have only been a dentist, he could have been the best dentist. And that's fulfilling his potential. Hooray, he became the biggest Rosh Yeshiva. So that was his potential.
Fulfilling ain't so fulfilling.
No?
It just seems strange that whenever we talk about fulfilling someone's potential, it's always winning the Torah.
Not necessarily. It could be in Chesed. It's not necessarily. There's a very, very special man in Yerushalayim called Uri Lepoliansky. Yeah, Uri Lepoliansky. He started off a gemach in his garage, in his machzan. Yeah, a gemach of lending out medical equipment. Yeah, that eventually burgeoned. That grew to something called Yad Sara. Yeah, Yad Sara is not only internationally acclaimed. The United Nations sends people to Yad Sara to learn how to make different places all around the world with this kind of organization. Now this is Chesed, unbelievable. Kiddush Hashem, unbelievable. He became the mayor of Yerushalayim from the our future Prime Minister, Ehud Olmert. Yeah, and he's built. He. I mean, the connection system is unbelievable. Till now, from you to, he can use. He's good for maybe. He can be my colleague or something else. This is the mayor of Yerushalayim. Yeah, this is the biggest club. If it wasn't even on the radio when he won his elections, he said all the different prime ministers, the mayors of Cholon and Rechasim, all the other things. He didn't even say once that Uri Polyansky became the mayor of Yerushalayim. Listen. Could have just killed him and from Jew to death. It's a Kiddush Hashem, that's an amazing fellow. Men's respect, all with Das Torah, all the Rabbi Yashiv behind him. Not his fitting potential. Okay, let's move on. Kivasus Pari Berichboi Rosh Hashanah. Now, listen, Kivasus Pari. Kivasus Pari, this is in the Shira. It says Kivasus Pari. Where is this? Yeah. Perek test, not possibly test. Kivasus para berichboy of Rosh Hashanah. Now, there's a very interesting story that Rav Zilberstein brings, that a woman came to his Beis Din and complained to him that her husband called her a horse. Yep, her husband called her a horse. What's that? Ah, I can think of worse things, but her husband called her a suso. He called her a suso, called her a horse. Now, according to Beis Din, according to halacha, a Beis Din is entitled to give a husband a knas if you call your wife names.
Yeah,
Shulchan Aruch. Okay, that's in a good context. But it's obviously it was not saying, oh, you're such a darling, you're such a horse. Yeah, it's obviously you're talking, this is in a derogatory state. He yelled at her and called her a horse. So she complained to Beis Din, came to Beis Din, and the Beis Din will machayev him a knas. Okay, a fine. Afterwards, after din prayer, he said, he called her in, so I want to talk to you. He said, you should just know that to be called a horse is actually a compliment. He says, in Shir HaShirim, it says like this, the susasi berichvei paroi, like my horse, to the chariot of paroi, the masayich rayosi, you are like this, my friend. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Klal Yisrael, you're like the horse in the chariot of paroi. Wasn't that? Says Chaim Belozhin over there, says Nefesh HaChaim, he says that what's the compliment of Kleisel being compared to a horse? So he said that generally a rider controls a horse. You pull this way, you pull that way. A driver controls a horse. He says when Klal Yisrael were going through the Yam and the Mitzrayim were chasing them, they suddenly saw the whole Yam collapse. The whole Yam collapsed, and they knew very well that if they go in there, they're going to die. So they were pulling back as much as they could, pulling back the horse, but the horse totally ignored them and carried on going into the river, going into the sea, and eventually killed them. So he says that was a koyach of the horse. The horse is a koyach. Your horse has a strength, just like by the Rechbe Paro, the horse has a strength to pull the rider, although the rider generally controls what's going on. The horse had the power to pull the rider into the sea. So too, Rayosi, my friend, i.e. Klal Yisrael, have a power to pull HaKadosh Baruch Hu along too. In other words, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a certain, obviously Hashem controls our lives, but just like by the horses pull the riders into the sea, we can pull HaKadosh Baruch Hu into what we want him to do. And how do you do that, says Nefesh HaChaim? By being mevater. But if we aren't particular what people do to us, if we let go of a grudge, we let go of the way people treat us, if that's the way we act to other people, Kodesh Baruch Hu will act the same way to us. And ultimately we force the Kodesh Baruch Hu to act in a particular way, even though he doesn't really want to, whatever that means, kaviyochel. Yeah? But even Kodesh Baruch Hu has a midas hadin, but we work differently, and we are mevater to people, we are susosis HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we're the sus, we put HaKadosh Baruch Hu in and pray midas harachamim. A story comes to mind of, I heard this story by Nachum Tzvi Finkel, Shlita, he told me this story. I was once walking with him to yeshiva, and he showed me the top of the yeshiva, there's an area there where there's a big hole, there's a part missing of the wall where it's been replaced by other bricks. So he said to me, do you know the story behind this? I said, no. He said, I think there's 67, even 48 or 67, I'm not sure exactly. the Jordanians were pummeting, were throwing unbelievable amounts of bombs. It's not the Christmas Fahad. You know what Christmas Fahad is?
No.
Do you know where Seville is?
Seville.
Do you know where the hotels are? The Olive Tree Hotel and the Novotel. But Novotel and the Olive Tree Hotel was Jordan. No. That was Jordan. The whole area was Jordan. That street there was no man's land. Yeah? And they saw Orim, and that area was Israel. So that was the border. So anyone knows the closest border, that was Mamas the border there. There's ugly little houses there as you go along. You go along from the coast, you see little houses, tiny windows. So they built them, they were made for the army to look through, and obviously needed small windows because otherwise you can blow them out, right? That was no man's land. So the Jordanians were throwing in grenades and bombs and rockets into the area there. And the Mir, when it was built there, built very much on the border, was being very, very heavily attacked. And so they went down to the Miklat, where Reb Oshi used to give shir. There's a big Miklat there. And they closed the door, and the whole yeshiva came in. The yeshiva wasn't that big at that time, about 300-400 people, and it all came to the yeshiva, came inside, the area came down as well, the neighbors came in, all into this big, huge miklat, there's a massive miklat there, and where you can buy the Gemara's chief at the beginning of the month, and they all came down there, and the bombs were falling, and in a corner of the room, Rav Chaim Shmulevitz heard a woman sobbing, and she was saying, Ribbono Shel'olam, my husband left me. I'm an arguna. I've been an arguna now for years. My children don't know where their husband is. I haven't got a get. I can't remarry. And how painful it is, how embarrassing it is, a husband leaves you without a get. Everyone knows I'm an arguna. The brain shalom. You know what? I'm moichel my husband, b'leiv sholim. I forgive him fully. I forgive him. I have no tainus on him. For the sake of this, if I'm a vata, if I let go of the pain that my husband's given me, you let go of the pain that the curse I've done to you, and save us in this moment. Just then, a massive missile fell on the Mir, and it fell off the building, didn't explode. Direct hit. That's the koyach of vitur. Suf v'roich v'ram v'yom. We can bring a kodesh boruch in with a bit of vitur, with a bit of letting go. We can bring a kodesh boruch in to what we have to do, and kaviyochol make his rotzen our rotzen. There's just one more vort I want to say. One more moshul and one more vort. It says on Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe Rabbeinu took, this is a Gevaldig Gevort, I'm sure many of you know the Moshe beforehand, but it's a Moshe worth saying over again. Right at the beginning of the passage, it says, V'yikach Moshe's Atzmei Seisiv Imoi, Moshe Rabbeinu took the Atzmei Seisiv with him, ki hashpeya hishpeyas nei Yisrael, leimoi pokud yifkod ikim eskem, alisim esasmei seim esay ibkem, that Moshe Rabbeinu took the bones of Yosef, because Yosef told them, that when you leave Mitzrayim, you've got to take me with you. So the prophet says, "V'yikach Moshe atzmei Yosef imoy." Moshe took the bones of Yosef imoy. The shaila is, what's this word imoy? Why is it imoy? V'yikach Moshe atzmei Yosef. What else? Obviously, took him atzmei Yosef. What's imoy? Why do you have the word imoy? Why is this word imoy? What's important about it? So in here, Chazal teach us, "Chacham lev yikach mitzvus." A chacham lev, a wise man, a wise heart takes mitzvus. He was wise. Everyone else was busy pillaging, taking all the stuff from Mitzrayim, and he was busy with the Aron of Yosef. What happened to him eventually? HaKadosh Baruch Hu buried Moshe Rabbeinu himself with that schus. So ask Yosef Imoy pshat like this. Plenty of people do things, but they don't see the importance of it. There's once a person with Nebuchadnezzar not making any money, b'chol, very poor, they had to marry off kids, Nebuchadnezzar, he didn't have anything, he didn't have 2 pennies to rub together. And he heard in a distant land, far, far away, if you go there, there are literally diamonds in the streets. Diamonds, jewels, you can pick them up. Unbelievably, become very, very wealthy. So he borrows money, and he prepares for the trip, and eventually gets on the boat, and he's seasick. He's in this little tiny cabin with 15 other people, and it's pushed, and it's smelly, and eventually, after weeks and weeks and weeks, he ends up in a distant land. And lo and behold, he gets off the boat, and there's diamonds there. Literally diamonds in the street. Unbelievable. And he picks them up, and he scoops them into his pocket, and he's got these big bags of diamonds. He can't believe his luck. So he goes to the shop, and he wants to buy some food. So he says to the shop, and he says, you know what? I haven't got any cash, I'll give you a diamond. laughs at him. A diamond, you must be joking. What's a diamond here? Here, there's diamonds outside in the street. You need your diamonds? You need your diamonds, forget it. He finds that diamonds aren't worth anything. Diamonds aren't worth anything. So he finds that what is a commodity that people really need? So even as people are very interested in fat, animal fat, schmaltz. Schmaltz. People like schmaltz as an old-fashioned thing. You put on bread, you smear it on bread. Fat, gewaldig, people instantly need schmaltz. Fat, fantastic. So he begins to make a little business. And his business grows and it grows and it grows, and suddenly he becomes the biggest schmaltz dealer of that island. And time comes, letters come across to him, his wife say, "No, Bruchela is about to get married, please come across, need to pay for our chasna." So he says, "Okay guys, time to pack up the business, you're going back home." And he packs up all his tens of barrels of schmaltz, and he hires a boat, and again it takes weeks and weeks and weeks for him to get across the sea. Eventually he comes home, and his family are waiting for him, and they're waiting for this big millionaire to come out. And his wife sees his barrels and barrels, she's excited, all the children are waiting for him. Nebuchadnezzar is dressed in rags, and he's dressed in his beautiful schmaltzy suit, and everything is gewaldig. Anyway, he gets off the boat, and suddenly there's this terrible smell. Ah, terrible smell. What's the smell? The schmaltz. The schmaltz has been at sea now in the heat for weeks, and all the schmaltz has gone off. And there's this, everyone runs, blowing their nose, and I said, "What's all that smell?" He said, "Darling, this is our wealth. I brought over schmaltz. Schmaltz? What schmaltz good here? It's all gone off already. You've been away for all these years, you bring back schmaltz? You crazy?" He said, but that's what's worth there, not here. Here we don't need schmaltz. Here we need diamonds, here we need jewels. What happens to diamonds and jewels?" Anyway, Nebuch, he goes to bed a broken man, his wife's furious with him, all his schmaltz has gone to waste, all these years of his life is wasted. Anyway, he wakes up and his wife is excited and the children are dancing. "So what are you so excited about?" He said, "You won't believe it. You put your trousers over the chair, inside the turnips of your trousers, we found a few diamonds. And you know what this is worth? We sold one of the diamonds and we bought something to buy our own house today. We got a few things, fantastic." And he realizes his mistake. Says the Chofetz Chaim, "We sent from Olam Haba on a journey. We sent on a journey. And we go across to fetch diamonds, to fetch mitzvahs, and to pick up mitzvahs. And we come to this world, what's a mitzvah already?" "It's a mitzvah." "It's nothing. Mitzvah, we're looking for schmaltz, looking for fat, looking for gashmias." And the person gets involved in gashmias and he builds and he builds and he builds. Eventually Nebuchadnezzar, 120, he's got to go back home. And he goes back on a voyage back, all the different Rekia, and they come to Shemayim. And he says, "Look at Hashem, look what I got, schmaltz. Schmaltz? It stinks. Get out of here. That's not what we want. You got your Rolls Royce. And he got you, and he got your house in Costa Rica, and another you know, massive bank account in Gibraltar. That's all we're looking for. Get out of here." And Nebuchadnezzar, he's depressed, and he finds Nebuchadnezzar's little mitzvah in his pocket, and suddenly, oh, Baruch Hashem, this little mitzvah I never thought of importance. That's a mitzvah that gets me into Olam Haba. But if he would have known what it was, that's Yikach Moshe's Atzmus Yosef Imoy. Moshe Rabbeinu, of course, he could have had wealth, but he took something, he could take it with him. Moshe Rabbeinu took a tzchus, he did a mitzvah that he could take it with him to Olam Haba. He wasn't interested in the schmaltz and Mitzrayim. He was interested in real things. And that's what made him great. And that's what made Moshe Rabbeinu a chacham leiv. He should all be very chacham leiv to have a life full of opportunity, to have his kavod to Kodesh Baruch Hu, to love Rabbeinu Shlomo Shleim, and if ever said do the right thing, they can bring a Kodesh Baruch Hu into our lives the best we possibly can. Sure it was.